south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Red letter day today. It's show number 900 for me. And good old expat Eddie, who hasn't made an appearance on the show in quite a while, wants me to tell you all that he's alive. In fact, that's how he checks in with me. He writes, estoy vivo, which means I'm alive. And sometimes he writes, hasta hoy vivo, which means, until now anyway, I'm alive. Anyway, we'll be checking in with some brand new Expat Eddie stories shortly, so stay tuned for that. Wow, show 900. Hell, you think I'd run out of things to babble about, huh? And all in all, after a couple of million downloads, I guess, more and more people have figured out it's time to have a plan B. But you knew that already, right? Or you wouldn't be listening. Speaking of having a plan B, I'm going to throw in my seminar plug right now and get it over with. My next Expat Insider Seminar will kick off January 10th, 2020. That's a Friday night, and we'll go all the way through to the following Thursday night, January 16th. Half the time or more, we'll be hanging in the Guatemalan Altiplano region, the perpetual spring-like weather. You'll experience that. And then every morning, we'll have a lecture from 8 till noon, and then we'll be off with boots-on-the-ground excursions to some of the most fabulous and mind-blowing places. And yes, we'll be going to one of those gigantic food markets I'm always talking about. So you'll be able to see for yourself why fresh food and vegetables down here cost a third to a fifth of what they cost up by you in the States. Then we'll be seeing doctors, hospitals, real estate, city living, burb living, various subdivisions, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. Well, you know, the whole fire hose treatment. And, of course, Expat Insider Seminar Repeat Offenders will get $1,000 off the regular price. And I've got that extra sign-up bonus offer. That is, for everyone who signs up for the seminar, you'll get a free one-hour Skype or phone consult, just you and me, where we can talk about everything and anything that has to do with the seminar. Your plan B, starting a business, housing, cryptocurrencies, apartment living, off-the-grid living, healthcare in Latin America, or the price of hockey pucks, whatever you want to talk about. For all the info, the itinerary, how to sign up, the pricing, etc., just go to www.theexpatfiles.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. Or just go to www.theexpatfiles.com/seminar. And of course, you could do what a lot of people do, that is, kill two birds with one stone. Stay on an extra week after the seminar and apply for your Guatemalan residency. If that's in your plan, our seminar lawyer will hold your hand through all of that. Anyway, hope to see you there. Now, you heard me mention that at the seminar, we'll be visiting one of those gigantic fresh vegetable and produce markets, which leads us right into this email from John. He says, Johnny, still playing catch up with 20% of your shows I've not heard yet, mostly in the last 2 years. So I don't know if I've missed any wisdom from you about this particular subject. I'm almost completely vegan, but I'm willing to taste Latin American food that contains animal products at least once, but I wouldn't want to eat a complete meal. And I have no intention of giving up being mostly or totally vegan in the long run. I would probably try dishes, though, where the non-vegan components can be easily removed, which rules out food that has been extensively cooked or makes extensive use of non-vegan sauces. So, Johnny, the question is, how are vegans in Latin America dealing with all of this? It seems to me that at least 75% of the food down there contains animal flesh, dairy, eggs, or all three. So, short of exclusively doing my own cooking or opening a restaurant, would I have a rough time staying mostly vegan? Would that be a no, yes, or a maybe? Regards, Johnny, from expat wannabe and gonna-be, John, from the belly of the beast. All right, John, all good questions. And I know you're up there in the belly of the beast, but I'm kind of thinking you've never been to Latin America, at least not off the Gringo tourist trail. Because if you've spent any time down here, you probably meandered over to one of those gigantic fruit and vegetable markets. And being a vegan, or nearly a vegan, your eyes would have practically popped out of your head. There's simply nothing like them, not up where you live. And vegetarians, vegans, natural food types, it's like seventh heaven for them. Because the truth is, there are many vegans who've come down to my Expat Insider seminars. A lot of them ended up staying in Latin America, mostly in Central America. And they've got nothing but amazing things to say about the food down here. And, you know, if you visit one of these guys or gals and you walk into the kitchen or pantry, you'll see gigantic quantities of fruits and vegetables of the sort you just don't see up in the States, even at those very expensive non-GMO organic farmers markets. Nope, there's really no comparison. So not only have I never heard a single complaint from a vegan down here, you know, it's just the opposite. I hear nothing but good things about the quantity, quality, and, of course, the prices. Hey, as for me, I hit the markets all the time. I usually go once every 2 weeks, and I stock up with vast quantities. Because, you know, health and nutrition are kind of my hobbies, too. Ever since my dear old dad croaked, heart attack, 54, ex-professional sports guy, and still at 54, quite thin, no weight problem, but he was on the all-American junk food diet, had to have his bread, lunch meat, candy bars, and donuts every day. Not to mention he was addicted to Diet Coke and Tums. And I'll tell you, the day he died is when I swore off all that stuff. I have not had a fast food hamburger, hot dog, anything like that, or processed meats in 35 years. That's when he passed, around 35 years ago. I have zero fast food, junk food, packaged food, or processed food around the house. Though sometimes when I'm out at a restaurant, I'll lax up and have a nice big slab of cheesecake, but I know myself all too well, and if I have junk food or any kind of fast food around the house, I'll get up at 2 in the morning and eat it. So I just avoid temptation and don't have it around. Though talking to gringos and expats who are not very health conscious, they're not very picky, discerning, or knowledgeable, or don't care what they're putting down their cake hole. The unfortunate thing, at least from my viewpoint, is so many gringos and expats decide they have to eat American food brands, you know, the imported stuff. And that stuff's here, all right. I mean, they got Walmart and Costco everywhere, so you can get practically every well-known name brand of packaged and processed stuff you're used to getting back home. But then, of course, your favorite U.S. crap food brands will have to be imported. For example, a food I never eat, ketchup. Now, you go into a Latin American food store, even a Walmart or a Costco, they'll carry two or three brand names of ketchup that's made locally, or at least within the country or nearby country. And if you're in one of the bigger supermarkets, they'll have Heinz ketchup, too, which just might be twice the price of the local stuff. So you might ask yourself, why is that stuff even in the store when they've got a couple of local brands? Won't they suffice? Well, because there's a market for it, with gringos and expats being a very small part of that market. Unless you're in a gringoized tourist area, then American products will be seen in most all stores. But when you're not on the tourist trail or near one, most of the demand for American labels will be coming from the Latino gringo wannabe sector. Because, you know, the image is firmly implanted in almost every Latino's mind that anything made in the U.S. or Europe is better than the local stuff. And that's definitely not true in the perfect example, ketchup, which, if you look at the label, you'll see contains a hell of a lot of sugar. And with the more expensive U.S. label Heinz brand, that sugar is high fructose corn syrup. And that's a recipe for obesity, diabetes, and all kinds of other health problems. But you knew that already. Meanwhile, the local brands have regular cane sugar. Still not good for you, but I don't have to tell you guys the difference between real sugar and high fructose corn syrup. So there's really two problems with buying imported foods here in Latin America. Number one, they're going to jack up your cost of living because they're always more expensive. And number two, your health will slowly deteriorate if you don't try to wean yourself off the good old American diet. The truth is, locally made and produced products are often very good and much healthier, definitely cheaper. Now, John also questions in that email, if you're a vegan, will you have to do much of your own cooking? Well, it seems like these days, even the hole-in-the-wall restaurants will have some kind of vegan or vegetarian selections on the menu. So you'll have no trouble if you eat out a lot. And the closer you are to a tourist or gringo area, the more you're likely to run into vegetarian restaurants. It's all the rage, you know. And even when you're way off the gringo tourist trail, if you happen to be in a wealthy or more high-end area, you know, the buildings, the cars, the roads, everything looks first world, you're sure to find some vegan and vegetarian restaurants there too, because Latinos with dough are extreme gringo wannabes, and since vegetarian and vegan restaurants are trendy up in the States, naturally you'll find them in the wealthier districts here in Latin America too. Another great example of the gringo wannabe effect, sushi restaurants. I mean, hell, that's how some 10 years ago or so now, expat Eddie made all his dough. He opened his first tiny little sushi restaurant. Actually, it was a kiosk in a mall. It was totally off the gringo tourist trail. Where do you think all his clients came from? Well, they weren't gringos because there were no gringos around. They were Latino gringo wannabes with more dough than brains. Which brings up another point. Don't ever confuse a Latino with money or a nice car for a well-rounded Latino with a legitimate brain. They don't correlate all that much. Seems with Latinos, the more dough or credit they have, the more they show off. Down here, it's a hard and fast rule. The bigger the car, the smaller the dick, the bigger the dickhead. Though I guess it's like that in the States too, isn't it? All right, let's move on, and this time we'll hit on the subject of that never-ending Venezuelan saga. It might surprise you to know that I've got lots of listeners in Venezuela. And lots of listeners up in the States who are part Venezuelan or married to Venezuelanos. Check out this email I just got from Rod. He says, "Hi Johnny, I'm addicted to your show. I was born in Venezuela, but I've lived most of my life outside of it. And I did elementary school in France. But I did go to high school in Caracas in the 1980s. I remember that on the way to my parents' house, there was a broken pipe that ran over a paved road. The leak was so great and remained unfixed for so long that it created a little forest in an otherwise barren landscape. Things started growing all around it. Well, guess what? Last time I went to Caracas a couple of years ago, the leak was still there and the forest ever bigger 35 years later. Needless to say, my parents, who still live there, have a cistern in their condo building and another two cisterns right in their condo. The one inside their apartment was added later when Hugo Chavez's water shortages became so horrible that the building cistern, the big one, was no longer enough. These days it's so bad they keep buckets around the house as well. By the way, Johnny, I bought one of those little water filters you recommended. Thank you so much for that. The cool thing is the Sawyer filter can use regular water pressure, plus it has a gravity filtration pouch that comes with it you can use when there's no pressure at all in the pipes, which happens in Venezuela a lot, and it's a dreadful situation. So when you use the Sawyer filter gravity bag, you don't need any electricity or water pressure. It's great. All right, just a little comment from me here. I know Rod wrote that email in response to a show I had about having your plan B here in Latin America and whether or not you're going to be on municipal or your own private well. And you know, I've warned, if you have a municipal system, you have to have a big cistern because chances are the water won't be pumping 24 hours a day. It just won't be available. That's the way things are here in Latin America when you're on municipal water, because municipal water is run by the government. It always is, just like up in the States. But up in the States, you have water 24/7, even though the government runs it. But let's see how long that lasts when the next crisis comes. Anyway, down here, when you're on municipal water, meaning you live in a city, you might have water 8, 12, or 16 hours a day, which also is a dreadful situation. But if you have a big cistern, you won't know it, because the cistern will be filling all the time when the water pressure's on, and that'll kick in when the water pressure's gone. It's automatic. And of course, you could collect rainwater from the roof. It's not illegal like it is in so many places up in the States. Now, about the fact that most municipal water supplies in Latin America are only on so many hours a day. You heard me mention that in a previous show, but it does not have to be that way, because it's not that there's not enough water. There's plenty of water. It's been estimated that in almost all Latin American municipal water systems, 50% of the water is lost by leaky or broken pipes, and that's why Rod mentioned his own experience with a pipe that's been broken for 35 years. And you know, Venezuela's a basket case, but believe me, that kind of stuff doesn't just happen in Venezuela. I could drive through any Latin American city or town and point out certain patches of moisture that have been there for weeks, months, who knows, even years. The fact is, it's got to be a real broken pipe gusher for the municipality slugs to get off their dead asses. Even so, the repair could take days. So just be aware of that, and if you're going to live in the city on municipal water, have a nice big cistern, you'll be fine. Oh, and get one of those recommended Sawyer water filters that Rod was talking about. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. I'll send you off an Amazon link, and you too could buy that system for well under $50, and it'll last you a lifetime. And with the extra added bonus, as Rod says, it'll work if you've got no electricity or water pressure at all. It's got a little gravity feed pouch attachment that'll give you a constant supply of drinking water under any adverse condition. It's a tiny little thing, too, no bigger than a clenched fist. By the way, it's a favorite of backpackers because you can take that thing out in the jungle or on top of a volcano and rig up the gravity attachment. Then you could make up a batch of pure drinking water every time you run across a stream or body of water. As for me, I've got two of those Sawyer water setups. I take one with me everywhere and the other one's a spare. All right, then Rod says in his email, Johnny, regarding the privatization issue in Latin America, yes, I agree with you. People love their subsidies. But the big problem, at least in Venezuela, is that when they privatize, they usually give the company the same monopoly that the government company enjoyed. In other words, the government doesn't open the business up for competition, and it's often a no-bid sweetheart deal to friends, relatives, or cronies, or for a payoff. And often, government services, if you can call them that, are so inefficient that private enterprises offer cheaper services even without a subsidy. That is, provided there is actual competition in the market. And yes, you can have competing companies using the same pipes and distribution when it comes to water. It's complicated, but the landline phone and cable companies have shared the same networks in the USA, and electric power companies share wiring networks and transmission lines, etc., so other countries can do it too. Anyway, Johnny, keep up the good work. Rod from Venezuela, living in Toronto, Canada. Man, talk about culture and weather shock. Moving to Canada from Venezuela. Anyway, since we're all over Venezuela today, how about this one? Isn't it funny, not in a laughing sense, that Venezuela has had an exodus of nearly 5 million people in the last couple of years, mostly escaping to adjacent Latin countries? And now, their 90 and 180-day visas have expired, so most of them are technically illegal. And at first, the neighboring countries welcomed them with open arms, until the flow became too much for them. Sound familiar? Now, just lately, last year or so, I've been traveling a great deal through Latin America, and everyone, and I mean everyone, in whatever Latin American country you're in, is singing the same tune. They're saying, at first, we were nice enough to let them in, but now, enough is enough. They're wreaking havoc on our social services, and some of them have turned to crime and worse. And doesn't that sound familiar, too? Now, the difference between the diaspora of Venezuelans flooding into adjacent countries, then, let's say, the masses of Haitians slipping into the Dominican Republic, is that Venezuelans are almost always much more educated and cultured than their neighbors. Because, you know, for years, some would say even a century, Venezuela was the richest country in all Latin America. The most cultured, had the highest literacy rate, at least till around the year 1999 when the corrupt socialist Chavez regime took over. So what you've got is a giant exodus of mostly educated Venezuelans, or at least more educated than the neighboring countries, but they've overstayed their welcome, as this article that just came out on October 8th points out in kind of a brutal way. Starts out, Venezuelan migrant Freddy Brito, no, not burrito, they don't have burritos in Venezuela, who lost a leg when he was shot years ago, uses a borrowed wheelchair to get to the site where he boards buses to sing for tips, that's how he makes his money, in Lima, Peru. On this day, Mr. Brito had just finished belting out a couple of tunes on the bus and was crossing a street on his one good leg when a taxi driver veered toward him, aiming to hit him. He yelled, "Get the hell out of my country." The taxi driver brushed up against him with his car, knocked his cassette player and backpack to the ground, which was filled with his songs that in a previous lifetime had made him almost famous in Venezuela. Now, the Peruvian taxi driver was heard to yell, "Veneco." That's a derogatory term now used for Venezuelans in other countries. It'd be the Venezuelan version of the N-word, Veneco. So what's going on? What's it all about? Well, as Venezuela's mass exodus persists, the initial warm welcome most Venezuelanos got from neighboring countries is wearing awful thin. In fact, in the last few months, multiple videos have appeared on social media in Peru especially, having shown immigrants from Venezuela being assaulted, threatened, and harassed in various ways, sparking concerns that xenophobic attacks on the newcomers are mounting and in some cases approaching a critical stage. In fact, polls and data point to a great uptick in the number of Venezuelan migrants and refugees who report experiencing discrimination, especially in South America, where the majority have settled. In Peru, for example, it's gotten so bad and such a hot spot for discrimination, a recently established immigrant abuse hotline, an 800 number, documented at least 500 separate incidents in a single two-week period, just in Lima, Peru. For example, in one particular video, there's a young Venezuelan woman whipped by assailants on a dark street, leaving deep purple bruises across her thighs. In another, Peruvian army men in uniform are saying on a loudspeaker that they won't let another miserable Venezuelan into Peru. Then, in another video, a young Venezuelan man is seen pleading with dozens of officers surrounding him as they take away his small box of chocolates he's selling to try to make a living for himself on the street. On the video, you can hear him sing in Spanish, of course, "How am I going to eat now?" And he's on the verge of tears. And in Peru, the xenophobia has even reached the Congress, where one angry lawmaker, one Esther Saavedra, took up the microphone to lash out against the Venezuelans, saying, good or bad, they need to leave Peru now. So it's not surprising people are acting that way when foreigners arrive in a country where economies are not prepared to absorb the workforce, whose social safety net has been stretched to the limit. But back to our one-legged musician, Brito. He admits in an interview that Peruvians are screwing with him all the time, and in one instance, even tried to make off with his prosthetic limb as he sat on a park bench near his home. He said some adolescent Peruvians grabbed his leg and yelled at him, "This thing must be worth something," as they unsuccessfully tried to remove it after demanding his watch and wedding ring. He says his prosthetic leg attaches to his right knee and requires a liner that must be replaced every 6 months, but it's now 3 years old and cuts into his skin painfully. So he mostly chooses not to wear it, which is why he hops around Lima on one foot instead. Then there's the case of his wife, who took a job at a beauty parlor when they first arrived. She said some Peruvian clients, the uppity ones, actually refused to let her touch their hair because she's a dirty Venezuelana. She said that in the year or so they've been in Peru, their family has been kicked out of two apartments on account of their nationality, and they now live in a church shelter. And the two most Latin countries prejudiced against Venezuelans? Colombia and Peru. Because out of the estimated 4.5 to 5 million Venezuelans who have fled, half of those are now residing in those two countries, Colombia and Peru. Yes, isn't socialism, and I'll use the A word here, awesome? Man, I hate that word. Meanwhile, back on the Venezuelan mainland, more news you'll probably never hear up in the first world. This is according to the Spanish newspaper El Nacional, and we'll translate here. It says, Russia has already begun the process to take over PDVSA, which is Venezuela's national oil company. It's being turned over to Russian state-owned oil company Rosneft. Western analysts would say this would make Venezuela a Russian satellite and put the U.S. in peril. And here's why. Turns out the Maduro regime has a huge debt with Russia. And to cover that debt, he provided 49.9% of the shares of Venezuela's oil company, PDVSA, to Russian oil company Rosneft as a guarantee. And now that Venezuela's defaulted on their loans to Russia, a complete handover of the company to the Russians looks imminent. Soon it says they'll have total control of PDVSA. They've already demanded that Venezuela reduce the personnel because currently there are over 70,000 people on the PDVSA payroll, and the Russians say it's not feasible to absorb a company that's not competitive. They're also reviewing the ships and facilities to determine the actual situation of the Venezuelan oil industry before they make their bid. Based on that, it says they should close the deal soon. The process, it says, should not take long because there's a dire emergency default situation in the works. Then, the article says, the Venezuelan regime is seeking legal means to hand over the control to the Russians without being labeled in the process as an act of privatization, which is not legal unless the National Assembly votes on it and approves the exemption under Venezuelan law. Then it goes on to say, previously, in the second quarter of 2019, the Russian state-owned oil company announced that PDVSA had reduced its debt from $1.8 billion to $1.1 billion U.S. dollars. And, it says, according to economist Alexander Guerrero, Venezuela was able to restructure its debt with Russia by paying them off with a gold shipment amounting to $666 million U.S. dollars. Turns out, it says, the multi-billion dollar debt that Venezuela owes Russia is the main link between the two countries. Then it says what's not widely publicized is that in June of 2019, The Maduro regime gave Russia two new gas fields and granted it 100% control of the project and all rights to extracted gasoline. Yep, as they say, you don't want to be indebted to the Russians. You got that right. Then it says, as of today, the Russian state-owned oil company owns large percentages of Venezuelan oil fields. Petromangas oil field, they own 40%. Petro Miranda, 32%. Petro Pahura, 40%. Blokaran, 26.6%. Petro Victoria, 40%. And Junin, more than 30%. Then it says, it's noteworthy to find that in December 2016, it was revealed that Maduro secretly mortgaged the Citgo refinery to Russia for a multi-billion dollar loan. And Citgo and PDVSA are in default on the payment, meaning Rosneft should end up owning, get this, important oil refineries and pipelines located in the U.S. under the Citgo name. Now, that's the reason I'm reading part of this article in the first place, which begs the question, you have any Citgo gas stations where you live? Well, very soon the attendants just might be speaking Russian. Then it says, one Francisco Mondaldi, a noted oil industry expert and researcher at the Baker Institute at the University of Raleigh, North Carolina, points out that he believes Vladimir Putin's government has played a genius game of chess in Venezuela against the U.S. because since moving into Venezuela and making deals with the oil fields, they've benefited in every way from the unprecedented crisis. And in the end, the Russian government will end up owning properties in the U.S. How about that? Mondaldi says Putin has made a brilliant move by acquiring a large position in Citgo from the Venezuelans. Then it says Maduro was only able to play into the hands of Putin because PDVSA, the Venezuelan National Oil Company, has destroyed itself. The company used to produce 3.5 million barrels a day in 1998, and today it only produces 640,000 barrels a day. That's down to less than 20% of its maximum production capability, which is why Maduro's regime turned to Russia, desperately trying to find a way out. Meanwhile, it says, one prominent Venezuelan economist says it would be treason to the homeland of Venezuela to try to exchange Russian debt for complete control of PDVSA, the Venezuelan National Oil Company. It will also violate the Venezuelan Constitution. But since when has the Venezuelan Constitution ever stopped Nicolas Maduro, who's somehow managed to change it a number of times? After all, since Maduro got in office anyway, the Venezuelan Constitution used to mandate presidential term limits.
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.